Welcome to part two of Intelligent Medicine. Today with Eric Telford, who's Senior Vice President at the Franklin Center for Government and Public Integrity. His contention is that Americans can't really afford agenda-driven dietary guidelines. And it seems that some of this is coming from the top. There's a big initiative that is spearheaded by First Lady Michelle Obama to clean up the diets of Americans, and that's very laudable. Certainly can't quarrel with the goal. But the White House pastry chef apparently is disgruntled. He just resigned, stating, quote, "I don't want to demonize cream, butter, sugar, and eggs." And this, and Eric, this guy is a real big shot in the culinary world. His name is Bill Yosis, and he, interestingly, he's leaving the White House in June to work on a new project focusing on food literacy, which is, I think, a laudable goal. But he said he never was really fully committed to the new policy of replacing butter with fruit puree and sugar with honey and agave syrup, which is per, I guess, the First Lady's specifications. I guess he just felt that he could not stay true to his pastry chef integrity.
I think that's a really telling sign. I think, again, we live in a free society where people should be able to make informed choices, and at no time have we ever had as much information at our fingertips to be able to research healthy living. And is it government's role to go in and say somebody doesn't have the self-control and therefore shouldn't be permitted to have a wonderful culinary artistry pastry dessert? I think it's great that we live in a world that has delicious food. I have friends whose metabolism I'm envious of, and just because I may not have quite the metabolism they do doesn't mean that they should be deprived of certain foods. I think one thing I really look at, my mom has celiac disease, and I remember watching as a kid, this was something that nobody was familiar with, kind of the anti-gluten diets, being able to find products that didn't have, or that were gluten-free, was a really hard task. She had to drive, I think, an hour away to a specialty food store to locate them. Now you can't walk down an aisle without seeing glaring
prints
at large chains of grocery stores saying gluten-free, information all over the internet. Even people who don't have a gluten intolerance are opting into gluten-free diets because that's the healthy choice they decide to enter into. So I think we're very fortunate
let's
to live in an age where we...
Let's say that our next First Lady is... it has a gluten intolerance. And let's say that her idea of a healthy diet for Americans would be to eliminate gluten from our diet. And she would then promulgate guidelines to suggest that people should eat a high-protein diet that's gluten-free according to her particular individual nutritional preferences or idea of what good nutrition is. That would be perhaps as wrong as the imposition of guidelines by fiat from the White House that's currently underway.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's a horrible message for somebody to say, here's the way I decide to eat my diet, therefore everybody else must do so as well. That's not democracy. That's not a free society. I think if this were corporate America making these decisions saying, we're going to ban such and such food, you would have government investigators saying, why should corporate America get to make those decisions? However, right now it's government making those decisions, so we're not supposed to question it. I think it's good for us to have a skeptical look at what our government's up to, what they're telling us, the guidelines that they try to impose. I'm always dubious of people who tell other people how to live their lives. And I think again, we should encourage people to be well-educated but allow them the freedom to make their own decisions rather than saying, here you go, we've made the choice for you.
But to be the devil's advocate here, some people may be listening to this podcast and they may be saying to themselves, this guy, Eric Telford, he works for an organization that claims to be a public interest group, but it may be on the take of the Cattlemen's Association, the beef industry, the dairy industry, the very industries that are being assailed by these guidelines, and they're funneling dark money this public interest group to push back against the guidelines so they can have a free fire zone to continue poisoning Americans with their cholesterol and saturated fat. I mean, what do you say to that?
I would first of all say that sounds delicious. I wish that were the case. I'd probably get a good steak and maybe some ice cream out of it. But I can assure you that's not the case. I come at this from a very principled standpoint. I don't have any, I'm not being funded by big meat or by big dairy. I just believe in people's freedom to choose. I think that I'm not advocating that because I like steak, therefore everybody should eat steak. And I don't think that a liberal academic should say, because I'm a vegan, everybody else has to be too. I am inclusive of all of these options. If people want to pursue veganism or vegetarianism or pescatarianism, that's great, and I think they should put out as much information about the benefits of that as they can. And if they have warnings about beef or about dairy or products that they think are unhealthy, I think they should do the best job that they can to educate the public to get that message out, to, you know, get into the media and make sure people are informed, put that content out there on the internet. That's the wonder of free speech.
Well, the so-called marketplace of ideas, getting this out into the marketplace of ideas rather than using the government as an instrument of policy enforcement.
Exactly. And even though I'm not funded by big meat, but if anybody in the cattleman's industry is listening, we're happy to take their check. but we don't have it right now. I don't think that government should be able to put them out of business because a panel of 15 people have decided they don't think red meat is healthy, when studies are just coming out to raise questions about that quote-unquote settled science that we were discussing before. It reminds me of, you remember in the 90s, kind of the cause celeb of environmentalists was saving the spotted owl.
Okay.
And they put almost 500,000 people in the Pacific Northwest out of work in the timber industry, pursuing this agenda to save the spotted owl. It's this harvesting of trees and the deforestation in the Pacific Northwest that's destroying their habitat and therefore leading to the decline of the spotted owl. Mm-hmm. After all these people lost their jobs and an entire industry was killed, they found out that that wasn't actually the cause of the endangerment of the spotted owl. It was the barred owl. That's a much more superior natural predator.
It was an invasive species.
Organically wasn't planted or wasn't, you know, induced by the timber industry. But the barred owl was a better predator, so it was getting to the food faster than the spotted owl. So now, what's the Park Service doing? They're sending rangers into the forest with shotguns to kill the barred owl. in this continued effort to save the spotted owl. So I think. I just deal in a very clear reality where oftentimes government, well-intentioned, they think they're solving the problem, but they create several more.
Right. So the composition of this panel, you say this panel is stacked with vegan acolytes, you know, people who have a vested interest in their point of view and are true believers. How do these people get appointed? Does it come from the White House? Or by what mechanism do they stack these committees with people who are like-minded?
It's all through the administration, so not directly from the White House, but from Health and Human Services and Department of Agriculture. Each year, they alternate between who runs point on overseeing the committee. So I believe this year it's Health and Human Services. Next year, it will go back to USDA.
Do you think that this is a feature of this particular administration? Because, I mean, you go back to, you know, LBJ and President Bush. I mean, these were steak-loving Texans, and I'm not sure that they would be as congenial to this notion.
Oh, it absolutely. It is these are appointments by the administration. This is reflecting their worldview. I think one thing we have seen of the Obama administration, time and time again, policies have been... that they've pushed for have died in Congress, things like cap and trade, attempts at exerting environmental control, have not had the support of the public and have failed through proper legislative course of review. And they've therefore tried to push through an agenda through administrative regulation and through department agencies without votes, without the will of the public being abided by. And so I think that's what you see happening here. This is environmental policy masquerading as a nutritional effort.
Right. Well, so at the root of this is the fundamental belief that there is global warming, which is controversial. And I mean, I'm not saying that there isn't a trend towards global warming. And that, actually, this goes back and forth among climatologists. But the prevailing view is that there is some slight global warming. The controversy lies in whether it is man-made or to what extent it is man-made. But what this notion of eating lower on the food chain to protect the environment and to protect the climate from degradation is very much based on the ideology of man-made global warming, is it not?
Oh, absolutely. I think everything is predicated on their assumption that that is, again, quote-unquote, settled science. And that's why we saw the failure of a policy like cap and trade to gain the necessary support to pass through Congress and become law. And we've seen attempt after attempt to try to use administrative regulations to address this something that they view as a reality. And again, I think, do I believe the science is settled on global warming? No, I don't. Am I willing to maybe just cede that debate and say, okay, I'll stipulate that maybe global warming is happening, but it's forcing every citizen in the United States to give up beef, really going to solve that problem? I would love to see an environmental impact study on how that would occur. What's next? I mean, humans emit without the use of cars or planes or anything, emit carbon as well. Do we start sacrificing humans? Do we start implementing China-style one-child policies?
Right.
What I find just particularly hypocritical and infuriating is the fact that the very people try and cram these policies down our throat are the ones who are jet-setting on private jets, who are, you know, traveling all over the world to have these meetings about sustainability, and they are the biggest carbon emitters themselves.
Doesn't the Franklin Center have its own private jet?
I wish. Once we get that money in from the cattlemen's industry.
Right. Once they figure out that you're on their side, they might give you a big infusion of cash. So what they're also saying is that, look, whether or not there's global warming and they believe that there is global warming and whether we're committing environmental devastation, when we tell you not to eat meat, it's better for you anyway. It's healthier. So you can't lose with an initiative, a national initiative to tell Americans to eat less fat, eat less animal products. Everybody's going to be healthier and the environment's going to be cleaner. And I also think that there's a lot of this belief that is being inculcated into our school children. I think that, kids come home with little projects that show how they're going to be, helpful for the environment, how they're going to do things to reduce energy consumption and eat lower in the food chain. This is a notion that's being very much popularized, even at, the elementary school level.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's why whatever guidelines come out of this committee are worthy of scrutiny, because this is not just being passively posted somewhere. It's being put into textbooks. It's being put on posters. It's being brought into every classroom in America. And the way that our children are educated is going to be predicated on a nutritional policy that is more aimed at advancing environmental and sustainability practices, rather than what is the healthiest for the individual, makes affordable food. I think the impact this is going to have on a lot of seniors who live on a fixed income, who live on government assistance, and have government-provided nutrition, and I don't know that they can afford a plant-based diet. If you go to the grocery store and look at the price of various goods, produce is, one of the most expensive things you can go, and also just the ability to keep it in your refrigerator preserved for long enough to actually use it. It's going to run up costs for the most disadvantaged people who need access to good, nutritious, healthy, affordable food the most.
Well, you mentioned the elderly, and actually when it comes to the science most recently, and this has been headlined from a variety of sources, a study just came out that evaluates the impact of protein on people over 65, and it was found that the more animal protein you consume, the less likely you are to suffer from disability. Now, this is counterintuitive for a lot of people. They think, well, the animal protein is the devil, and that animal protein is the key promoter of disease. in America. But when you look at the objective facts, and you look at particularly the elderly who may be more prey to loss of appetite or a process called sarcopenia, which is a loss of muscle mass, they actually do better on animal protein. It's an efficient source of protein to repair the body and to maintain muscle mass and to fuel recovery from illness. So, there is, I think, is an argument maybe what they'll do is they'll do a carve-out. They'll do an exception. They'll say everybody should eat a plant-based diet, but if you're over 65, you get an allowance. You get to eat more animal protein. Maybe that's the way we're going to do it once we implement this broad sweeping program.
Absolutely right. They may say, hey, old folks, eat your broccoli and lettuce and take a multivitamin. But I think I remember a study even a year or two ago that warned against the use of multivitamin, saying that there could be...
That's a whole other subject. You know, you're talking to a nutrition-oriented physician here, and I've got some real problems with those studies. But, okay, so what's the call to action here? For our listeners who are concerned, well, where can they access your article? Because it makes a lot of sense.
Great. I appreciate saying that. If they check us out at franklincenterhq.org, they'll be able to find links to most of our work. Any op-ed that gets published externally will be linked there, and that also has a link to our watchdog.org news website. And I guess the call to action is to stay informed. This is a really obscure issue. This is not a sexy topic that you're going to see headlining the opening of the 6 o'clock news tonight. This is something that's going to fly very much below the radar, and I'm glad to see it gaining a little traction. I'm really glad The Hill carried my piece. I'm glad that outlets like The Daily Caller are picking up on this. But I think people need to pay attention and do something as simple as tell your friends, post about it on Facebook, forward an email, find one of the op-eds. Doesn't have to be mine, but go look at some of the story of the news coverage that The Daily Caller or other outlets have done. I know the Cato Institute's coming out with a study soon. But just take this information and share it, because knowledge is power, and we need to make sure that people are aware of what's happening and that they hold the government accountable. I think ultimately we'll get to the point where in a year or so these recommendations are going to be put forth, and the question is going to be whether or not to implement them. At that point, I think it would be good to invoke congressional oversight. People should stay informed, contact their elected officials, and just don't forget about this important issue.
By the way, as I glance at your resume, I notice that you enjoy a very, very amazing distinction, which is that it says here that on April 15, 2009, you, Eric Telford, were named Keith Olbermann's number two worst person in the world on MSNBC for your libertarian views. And so
I never thought I'd get a phone call from my parents saying, "We just heard you're the second worst person in the world, and we're so proud of you."
So
I just always like to point out that I still have a job, and I guess Keith Olbermann does again. But
no, he's back doing sports, and he does. I got to say, kudos to him. I think he does a great job. He's really a good sportscaster.
He should have never left sports.
Yeah, no, and in fact, I think he that was his métier, and I think that his political foray was. It was a short-lived and, well...
Like when Michael Jordan went to play baseball.
Exactly. We'll leave it at that. All right, so thank you very much, Eric Telford, for pointing out something that's coming down the pike for many of us. And, with a lot of threats to our personal liberty here in America, I think it's important that we remain vigilant. So thank you for...
Thank you for having me.
Manning the bastions of freedom. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Thanks for joining us. This is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.